From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this past Monday when a new piece of legislation aimed at making government more ethical blew up like a poorly tied water balloon on a hot summer day. Monroe County Republicans wrote the ethics reform law with an intention of banning outside employment by professional staff. This has been an issue on the state level, I get that. Not so much that I've understood on the local level, and somehow Republicans say they fail to realize that if they passed this law, it would have forced the county health director, Dr. Michael Mendoza, to quit his job in the middle of a pandemic. Republican leader Steve Brew told reporters that that was never the intention, and quote, "Taking Dr. Mendoza out is just nuts," end quote. Well, yes. But now things are being rewritten, and the question is, by whom and for what purpose? What happens next here? What should ethics reform look like? Local government has been awash in ethics issues for years now on multiple levels here. And on the county level, here's just one recent example. Legislator Ernest Flagler Mitchell acknowledged sending pictures of his genitalia to young women who had sought his help on various matters. Roughly a dozen women say that Flagler Mitchell engaged in forms of sexual harassment, coercion, or abuse of his power. And yet there is no provision, no ethics standard that I know of, allowing for his dismissal from office. He still serves. He ran for re-election in the June primary. He lost, by the way, but he very well could have won. So if we're going to rewrite the ethics laws, what needs to happen? One county legislator who has been working on this issue for years and who has drawn been willing to draw the ire of her colleagues by saying it's got to be done right or a certain way. That's Democrat Rachel Barnhart, and she is going to join us this hour. We also asked if County Executive Adam Bellow could join us. He was unavailable this week. His office recommended another county legislator, also a Democrat, John Baines. John Baines is here. Hi, John. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon.
We invited Republican leader Steve Brew to join us. He was not available, and Rachel Barnhart is on the phone with us. Hi, Rachel. Thank you for taking the time for us.
Hi, John, and hi, Evan.
So I'm trying to unpack a lot of how we got here. Can I ask both of you to kind of give me as much of a Cliff Notes version as you can, your view of how we got here, and then we're going to talk about what needs to happen in, if we're going to get real ethics reform. John Baines, how did we get here?
Well, the frame question of how come here in New York we can never get ethics right is a good place to start. And we know at the state level that the next appointment, it seems, of our state leaders is often jail. So, you know, getting it right in our county is something that, you know, it's a big undertaking. It's going to take a tremendous focus from all stakeholders. And so, like so many aspects of government, the most recent interest, broad interest in the issue came about from a scandal. The scandal to which you referred, which is legislator Flagler Mitchell. The proposal by Adam Bellow and by Rachel and our caucus to incrementally improve the process, it was not necessarily super bold, but it contained some significant changes, was tabled. And summarily so. So
tabled by
the majority.
By the Republicans.
And, you know, for your listeners, the majority, the way the charter works in this county is 15 votes controls everything, and they control everything. So when you propose something in the minority, they can swat it away by simply tabling it, which they did. And then when they came out with the most recent proposal and then started their backpedaling, it was proposed by Steve Brew and by Vince Felder. And even in that respect, you have a situation where you have a dysfunctional legislature where the president claims that he can name the leader of our caucus and, in fact, is insisting that Vince Felder so is the leader, and Vince Felder is insisting he's the leader, even though we've selected Yuvershe Roman.
A majority of Democrats have selected
all of them, except for himself. So you have a situation where, per usual, you have a major structural change that's long overdue. Now we have a scandal. And the question, and I have some thoughts, and I'll let Rachel speak, but first, how she thinks we got here. But I have some serious thoughts about how we ought to go forward.
Let me, before we get Legislator Barnhart's view on this, let's just hear what County Executive Adam Bellow had to say in brief here this past Monday. his view of the proposal that Republicans brought this week.
We have a legislature upstairs that isn't thoughtful, that is not thinking about the ramification or implications of what they're doing. And I want to be generous in saying that, because if they are thinking about the ramifications of what they're doing, this is very dangerous.
He's talking about a proposal that could have forced Dr. Michael Mendoza out, Daniel Ponder, John Boehner, and among other county...
Well, you know, full disclosure, my son-in-law is a public defender. I always disclose that. And so you have public defenders who teach. Danielle Ponder is one of the more prominent figures because she's such a delightful performing artist. But you basically would not be able to do anything gainfully to employers to be employed. Our ADAs teach, our social workers provide valuable services to people in desperate need. And, you know, and as I joked on the radio the other day, the legislature itself is a side job. So the irony, it seems like it's the most irony-challenged legislature I know, that they're forbidding a side job when every single one of the 29 legislators is working a side job. And the other comment is that when you're in the public service, at one point in the 80s, I worked five jobs because I wanted to be a teacher and I couldn't do it otherwise. I had to. So I wasn't working those other jobs to get rich. I was working those other jobs so I could keep doing the job I really wanted to do, which was teach school. So that part of the proposal is really, really unthoughtful. And then the second part was they essentially put in a cover-up provision where two-thirds of the legislature has to reveal any investigation or its findings. And that effectively would bury every single investigation and would have buried the Flagler-Mitchell information.
Legislator Barnhart, how do you think we got here?
I think we have to go way back to the 1980s. You know, when the city of Rochester and Monroe County went to a strong county executive and strong mayor system where these jobs were directly elected by the people, we didn't really change our charters to have strong ethics infrastructure. So it's almost like they didn't finish writing the charter, because we love Tom Ryan, we love Lucian Morin, we loved our city council people and our legislators, and it's almost like they didn't really anticipate what could happen if you don't have the proper guardrails in place. So the Monroe County Ethics Board, and this is the fault of absolutely nobody in power right now, the Monroe County Ethics Code and board structure is probably one of the weakest in the state. It is. It does the bare minimum in terms of what the state law requires ethics boards to do. And we submitted a proposal, and John did a great job just explaining all of those dynamics. We submitted a proposal that would have defined sexual harassment and really provided a pathway for people to make complaints about elected officials. Because here's the thing, if an elected official does something wrong, you can't go to human resources. That's why you have inspector generals, you have comptrollers, you have ethics boards, you have ethics codes, you have things in place so that when something happens that is questionable or outright wrong, there's an accountability mechanism, there's a transparency mechanism. And Monroe County really needed to beef that up. And so our proposal would have gone in that direction. The Republicans did something far more sweeping, but it was problematic on a number of levels. There were some good things in there. For example, the makeup of the county ethics board is three people, all recommended by the county executive and approved by the county legislature. That's really unusual. In most municipalities, you have the legislature making appointments as well as a county executive. You have term limits. You have, and so their proposal did change the makeup of the board, but it didn't have any term limits, which I thought was not right. And then this idea of banning outside income, one of the reasons state law even has ethics boards is to review financial disclosure statements for conflicts. Now, I think this should be done in a transparent way, but it's almost like the GOP bill was kind of a solution in search of a problem. And so that was one issue. The other issue, as John pointed out, was it would essentially raise the possibility or likelihood that advisory opinions would be kept secret. I think they should be public. And our proposal, the Democrats' proposal, would have made sexual harassment advisory opinions public, because that public piece of it is a way that you have transparency and accountability. So I think there were some good things in the GOP bill, but I think there were a lot of things that, frankly, just really required a lot more thought. And I'm glad that the majority leader has already said he will be rewriting this bill and won't be moving forward with it. And I see this as an opportunity. Let's get this right. Let's work together and let's try to get this right.
Okay.
And we're waiting for news on what that could look like.
All right, John.
Well, I have some thoughts on that. I agree with that. And I think the first thing we need to remember is that this will be a structural change that will outlive the current legislature. So we need to tether structural changes, significant reforms, to the voters. We need to hear what the voters have said in the most fresh and recent way. So we know right now, as we sit here, that there will be 10 new legislators sworn in January. You know, if I lose my election, there'll be 11. And other people do as well who are currently incumbents. So I think that as we talk about making these changes, the first thing we need to remember is that we've already had an election in June that was what Barack Obama would probably call a shellacking, when he ironically said that back in the congressional race. And the community has spoken. In fact, Joe Carbone, before he flip-flopped and said that he wanted Ernest Flagler Mitchell to resign, kept saying, let the voters decide. Well, the voters did decide that William Burgess, Mercedes Vasquez Simmons, Ricky Frazier, Carolyn Delvecchio Hoffman, Sue Hughes-Smith, and Albert Blankley, when we get all the votes counted, I think, that they want these folks to represent them. So I think that we should definitely start a process. It should be deliberative, and I have a proposal for that. But that we need to make sure that we include the new legislature. And I see this in a very similar way to redistricting. Redistricting shouldn't be decided by the lame ducks who are on their way out, either because they're term limited or because they've lost primaries, or after November 2nd because they've lost elections. So my proposal and kind of quick synopsis of it would be that we should do a full-scale hearing before the legislature, all 29 legislators. We should invite in key stakeholders in the community. We should actually act like a legislature. It would be really a novel approach in the county. Not six people in a room who are appointed by people who have demonstrated they don't know how to appoint people objectively and fairly based on their hyperpartisan past.
So you mean for any ethical claim?
No, I'm talking about, let me back up. Ethics reform is totally process driven. So in other words, the problem that we have with ethics is that we get the process of the ethics reform wrong, and then the outcome of the ethics reform is attacked. So what I'm saying is we need to really slow down and get the process of developing the process right. And what the process ought to be is a comprehensive, community-wide effort to include all the necessary voices. I'd like to see us have a four-hour hearing in the legislative chambers. I'd like to hear Mayor-elect Evans' testimony, if he would want to come. I'd like to hear the League of Women Voters' testimony. I would like to hear victims who come in, who choose to come in and share with us how they feel they've been treated by elected officials who are protected by ethics codes, which are not citizen-oriented but politician-oriented. And then I think that as we go through this process, all the candidates running for office can join us. The candidates who've already won primaries can be there. And as we continue to go back and forth, and we have meetings about it, and it's all open, it's all on video, and everybody's participating. We take the best ideas that Rachel has. We take the best ideas that Steve Brew has. We listen to the best ideas of our community. And then I think in January, when we have a new legislature, we vote on it. That would be a process that wouldn't contaminate the outcome.
Okay. Rachel Barnhart, any disagreement, first of all, with the process, and then we're going to talk about the substance of the reform. But how does that process sound to you?
I think what Legislator Baines has proposed sounds really wonderful. My concern is that we don't have the majority today. We may not have the majority in January. I hope we do. I'll be working to flip the legislature over the next few months. My concern is that the Republicans could pass a bill that is a bad bill, and we won't have a way to undo it. I am really grateful that through the county executive and the Democratic caucus that we were able to exert pressure on the Republicans to essentially say, yeah, this is not a great way to move forward, and let's try a different way to move forward. It is my hope that the majority will include us in drafting a new bill. I hope they do, and I hope they don't. But I hope that we're able to get things in that bill if they decide they want to pass it before January. That we are able to get things in there that we really like, and frankly, ideally, we'd all agree on it. I'm worried that we won't be able to delay until January. And I think we can work for both things. And I think we can work for John's solution. And I think in the meantime, we can also try to work for the present and practically acknowledge that we are not in the majority and we are facing actually a supermajority situation on the legislature, which has been extremely difficult for good government because the county executive cannot veto something when there's 20 votes. So I'm kind of looking at it from both ways, and I'm really interested in seeing if the Republicans are serious about working with us on a good bill. I think ethics is something that should transcend partisanship. You know, we've all been through a lot. Our caucus has been through a lot over the last 2 years. This legislature is deeply dysfunctional. Is this a way that we can work together for something good? I don't know. I'm trying to keep an open mind. There's not a lot of trust on either side. But if this is if there's an issue to come together on, this should be it. We shouldn't have ethics boards be political footballs. We shouldn't have ethics boards be used as weapons. We should have a structure that the community can have confidence in, that it's not a political entity. And it is my hope that we can find such a structure, such a code, and a process that everyone can believe in. I don't know if this legislature is capable of that. I don't know.
Okay.
But I'm willing to try.
Well, and so let me ask John Boehnke then, because it sounds to me like the two guests on this program, both Democrats and the county legislature, agree that in an ideal world, you would have and the open process that you, Legislator Boehnke, described. What your colleague is saying is, absent knowing that we can do it that way, they may on the other side of the aisle be moving faster than we'd like, and we better get in there and be willing to write this legislation with them, because they could pass it. They've got the votes, and they. If they don't want the process, then we're not going to have the process that you describe. So do you agree with your colleague that while pushing for that open process that you describe, you've also got to get in the room and write this bill with them and make sure it's a good bill?
I don't agree with that. I think that we should get in the room, and the room ought to be a public room with the community able to watch what's happening.
But is that too idealistic?
No. That's what legislation is supposed to be like. That's what's supposed to be happening in Albany. It's supposed to be happening in Washington. And, you know, if they want to ram this through, you got to remember that the people voting with them to override a veto, we're talking about Vince Felder, where he got defeated. We're talking about Ernest Flagler Mitchell voting. If they want to push this through with the votes of individuals who have been roundly defeated by their own communities, I think they're making a mistake. And in fact, Steve Brew walked this back for a reason. He didn't walk it back because he couldn't do what he wanted. He walked it back because he recognized that just like with the Cable Act, just like with the patronage scheme at the BOE, just like with the slush fund, just like the writing of this legislation, which is not thoughtful, they do things and then they react to the community saying, that isn't right. And, yeah, we do have an election. I don't fear it. I don't fear the election in November. And I think they should fear it if they push this through.
But what if you can write from scratch, essentially, a good bill together?
I wouldn't preclude that if we're all in the room, we're all able to be heard. But the problem is that the people named to this committee that they want to form, as I understand it, and they are back-channeling. They're not talking to me, and they're not talking publicly. So they've back-channeled to people, so I'm relying on what people tell me. But the people who are selecting the players, number one, one of them is going to be Vince Felder. How can we have any credibility when we have the leader of our party is not the leader of our party, picking the members of our party who are putting together a bill, which he's come out and said that he liked this new bill, which he co-authored to protect his friend? That was what the provision was put in there.
I think he would dispute the idea that it was just to protect his
friend. No, he wouldn't say it's just, but he said it on Channel 13, and he said it on his radio show, that the purpose of the two-thirds vote to disclose the information was because he didn't like what happened to Ernest Flagler Mitchell.
Okay, so Rachel Barnhart, your colleague is saying because Vince Felder has a hand in this, and because
I don't know if he does. That is not. I mean,
you don't.
I spoke to Steve Brew, and I have been given. He did not have details fleshed out about what this bipartisan way forward will be. I will not, like John Boehner, I will not support something that isn't good faith. I don't know what's being proposed yet, and I think we're going to find out Monday. The agenda charter committee meeting is Monday. That's when the GOP proposal, the bad one, will, I think, be put away for good. And I think we'll get some details about what will be proposed going forward. And I'm keeping an open mind until then. But again, I think everything that John is saying is fair and it's accurate. But I don't know what will happen on Monday. It is my hope. It is really my hope that, and maybe I'm naive, okay? And maybe we'll find that out. But it is really my hope that we can find a true bipartisan way forward. To me, this issue is just really important, and I just want it done right. And I don't know if this group of 29 legislators can do it, but I'm really hopeful because this issue is just really important, and I don't know what their intentions are. So I would rather participate than not. However, as John has noted, if it seems like this isn't serious or bad faith, then I don't think we can participate. But let's see what happens. And again, I might be the one eating crow here, but this is where I'm at.
Okay. I don't. Do you have a 1:30 hard out here, Rachel?
I do.
Okay.
So
you got a minute and a half. So tell us, if you're going to write a bill here, give us your top list of what's got to be in this bill.
Sure. I mean, I think the makeup of the ethics board is key. I'd like to see the president, majority leader, minority leader each have one appointment. The county executive have three appointments. I'd like a seventh appointment to be done in a bipartisan way. Maybe the majority leader and the minority leader agree. There have to be staggered term limits to start off. There has to be time limits for filling seats. Advisory opinions should be public, posted online. There should be a path to censure. Sexual harassment should be definitely spelled out in the code. I think everything that the Democrats propose should be in there. And I think that's a good way forward here. I would totally remove the outside income piece because financial disclosures. And by the way, I post my financial disclosure on my website because I just really believe that they should be public. But they are subject to FOIL, and I would make that very clear in the legislation that they're subject to FOIL, so people know about conflicts of interest. And I would definitely tighten up the revolving door too, which was in our proposal as well. And so that's what I would do going forward, and I'll be pushing for those things, whether it's this legislature or the next one. And I certainly hope, John, I share John's desire that it will be the next one, but it might not be. So let's see what we can do while the issue's hot.
Last thing, real quick, would your proposal have made things different for Ernest Flagler Mitchell's case?
Yes, because people should have a way. There should be a clear path to hold elected officials accountable. Look, we know we can't remove an elected official unless they commit a felony in New York state law. I mean, it's very prescribed, but there should be a way to hold people accountable. And that transparency piece, that ability to censure, that saying, hey, here's this advisory opinion, and it's you know, here's what I had to say. These things are really, really important so that voters, the public, understands what their elected officials are doing. Our proposal and any proposal, you know, would not have addressed the Flagler-Mitchell situation, but it would have addressed the next one. And there's always going to be a next one, unfortunately.
Thanks for making time, Legislator Barnhart.
Thank you so much. Bye, John. Bye, Evan.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. That's Rachel Barnhart, legislator. Who's a Democrat. John Boehner is a legislator who's a Democrat. And some disagreement right now inside what I would say is the Democratic caucus. I don't even know how to describe your party in the legislature anymore because of the dissension. But the point is that you and your colleague who've been on the line here have worked together, I think worked on very good terms. You happen to disagree right now about whether you can get good ethics reform done this year. Because of all of those factors, you disagree on that. She basically closed by saying, "Let's just see." And she admitted maybe she's going to eat crow next week. But do you at least give her that space to say, "Hey, if I can get them to get on board a good bill, can you be patient and see?"
I just don't think you can do a good bill without including the community. I think when you do,
it's sort of dead from the start.
Well, I just think it's, you know, this legislature is a broken legislature in many ways. It can still function, but it doesn't function well. This is a legacy law that will affect us in the future. By the way, I don't agree that it can't be changed. We could change it if it's flawed and it's rushed through and there's a new government in charge. There's every reason to believe, based on the charter of the county, that we can improve it and change it and alter it. But again, my whole point of view is, and you know, process is everything. In jurisprudence, as you know, I was a local judge for 10 years. You get appealed. When you don't have a clean process that's sequenced, that protects due process, which is a different thing from process, of all the individuals, particularly the accused, then you taint the outcome. And, you know, it's no accident.
And the public loses faith in it.
Yeah. And there's no surprise that there was an effort to politicize the outcome of the Flagler-Mitchell investigation. You may recall that openly people challenged the credibility of the three individuals, and which I thought was shameful. And you know, they basically didn't have buy-in. What I'd like to see is both parties. We need a bipartisan bill, and if the Republican Party decides we're going to ram it through before Election Day, then they're going to be held accountable for that. And I think the voters in this county care about this. Now, some people say to me, well, you know, people don't care about this. Well, it depends. It kind of depends who the people are. I think your listeners care about this issue. I think my constituents care about this issue. I've been out knocking on doors, handing out my propaganda. I just gave you a copy of it. And on there, I reference ethics. And people are very interested in that. And we have a chuckle because they say, oh, ethics, government, you know.
The joke is government can't be ethical.
Correct. It's sort of like my friend who was in the Army said, yeah, Army intelligence, ha ha, you know, and he was sort of self-lampooning, you know. So, but come on, let's get past the joke to the reality that if, you know, we're living in a county where we just had the Judge Rosenbaum case. We're living in a county where we had the Webster superintendent case. We're living in a county where it's a, not a fire hose, maybe, but I would say a pretty constant stream of high-ranking either elected officials or trusted individuals in the government sector. We have cases. We have pending litigation in the criminal courts right now. We don't need to pile on and list it all involving prominent elected officials like the mayor. So, you know, I think that we should be a deliberative. We should include everybody and have a hearing. And I think what happens is if you say we're going to have six people to draft the legislation, have a quick vote, and it's over, what you lose is the buy-in. The key is the buy-in. So the League of Women Voters comes in and testifies. I'd like to hear some of the town supervisors. I'd like to come in and the mayors in our community to speak to this. I think we should take this opportunity not just to look small scale, small bore at the county, but think about having a model. You know, to Rachel's point, it's so weak. It's a model of what not to do. Let's have a model of how to do it, both in terms of the process, the outcome, the legislation itself. And then hopefully that will ripple out into our town governments, our village governments, especially, again, if they participate in it, and we do so in a public way, it's a teachable moment for our entire community. And I don't like the idea of, let's get this done on Monday, or let's do what we can do because they're going to do something anyway. It's too big. It's too big for that. That's political, and that's necessary. Sometimes you're like, hey, I'm one of 10 kids, right? I want to get one potato. I'm going to get my one potato. I get it, right? But this is a big issue. This goes to the structure and integrity of the faith in the community and our entire government process. And I don't think we should demand anything less than a complete airing out of the issue, involving stakeholders, having hearings, and then put something together. And in January, when we have at least 10 new legislators sworn in, they vote on it because they're the ones who are fresher in terms of their receiving the endorsement of the voters. If I lose my election, I shouldn't be participating in a legacy. My opponent should be the one who votes and finalizes this plan, because that's why we have elections, every 2 years in Congress and every 2 or 4 years in the legislature.
Okay. I take your point there, and I understand the idea that if the public perception is that whatever ethics reform happens was designed just to protect one party or another, one person or another, then it's going to be viewed as a sham. Even if we could wave a wand and make sure everybody participating is doing it in the most upstanding way possible, if the public perception is that it's corrupt, it will not be trusted and it will not be functionally helpful.
Yeah.
I agree with that, but why is it that so much of ethics reform comes down to protecting our team? I mean, do you believe that government can pass ethics reform that isn't just about rigging the rules for somebody?
I 100% believe it.
You believe that?
Absolutely. And, one of the things that's kind of nice about developing it now is we don't know who's going to be in power. So the uncertainty of who will be in power is the greatest
check.
But
isn't that an argument to do it now then? Why wait till next year? Doesn't that contradict your argument that let's wait until a new group takes power?
No, it doesn't. I'm saying we develop it, work on it now, vote on it then. So what we're doing is we're developing it without knowing who's going to be in charge. It's when you know you're going to be in charge that you rig it for the people in charge. I mean, take a look at Jay Cope. You've done shows on it probably.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And you take a look at Albany and, ethics reform. Take a look at the Board of Elections in our state. They don't have any teeth to bring prosecutions against people who talking about politicians who don't play by the rules, et cetera. And again, I think the analogy here really is redistricting. Are we actually going to let this current group push through redistricting before the 10 to 15 new legislators are seated on January 1st for an elect of 2022? For an election that's going to happen in November of 2023, for a legislature that's going to be seated in January of 2024. So I think that we need, again, to have the most fresh legislature, most connected to the will of the people, make this decision. And that's why I'm not saying we should slow down. I said we should get to work. Let's schedule a public hearing. Let's invite in the League of Women Voters. Let's invite in the municipalities.
Start compiling testimony.
Yep. Yeah. Let's collect testimony. Let's hear from folks. Let's have some shows on WXXI about it. And let's let people weigh in. Let's study some models.
But no vote until next year.
I think we should wait until we have a new legislature.
Okay. After we take our only break of the hour, I'd like John Baines to do one other thing on this subject for us. There's been a lot of talk this hour about the most recent scandal, and there have been, unfortunately, he's right, many. But his colleague, Ernest Flagler Mitchell, is facing accusations from more than a dozen women, and he's admitted to some of what he's been accused of, sending pictures of his own genitalia to women. He was supposed to be helping one woman who, is dealing with the trauma of a mass shooting. So what I would like explained is this. Is there truly nothing right now that the legislature could have done about that? Is there nothing that the ethics board could have done? could censure have been an option? And censure, I don't think, happened, right? So when we come back from this break, I just want to make sure we understand one of the reasons we're here right now, because it's very strange to me that you could have all of this piled up and nothing happened. So let's get a little bit more of an explanation for that on the other side of this only break. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, do you trust political polls anymore? I think pollsters would admit they really struggled with Donald Trump and his voters to get it right. But beyond that, polls have remained pretty steady. In fact, even local polls have been pretty good. So what does it mean about how we track political opinion and how much we can trust when it comes to polling? We explore it Monday.
This is Veronica Volk from WXXI News, and we've got a new weekly podcast for you. It's called Earshot, and it's got all the most important, best told, sometimes off the beaten path news stories from your favorite WXXI and city reporters. Earshot comes out every Friday. Don't miss it. Subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.
This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. So let me start with this, John Baines. When everything had happened with your colleague, Ernest Flagler Mitchell, did the legislature have an option to censure?
Yes.
And you didn't do it?
No, because we motioned for it, and then the motion was denied by the majority, the supermajority.
President Carbone's got a big say in that, doesn't he?
Correct. I mean, the majority controls what comes to a vote. Nothing comes to a vote unless they let it come to a vote, and they did not. It's just like the ethics proposal as it was tabled. So you have to, you know, again, the way the charter is written, and then with the supermajority. I mean, Dr. Carbone, when he wrote his fundraising letter, which was really interesting, he basically said, "Hey, I've got a supermajority."
He did. That's right.
And he said, "I've neutered the county executive, and I control all the departments," which was wild. I mean, that he was saying that, and I don't know what he was trying to imply, but it's kind of a reference to naked power. And I really don't think that this charter is written to prioritize the minority.
Okay, so I just want to make sure people understand some of what John's saying there. Joe Carbone, president of the legislature, a Republican, did send out a fundraising letter boasting of the power he was able to accumulate despite losing the county executive seat. The Republicans lost it. Democrats won that. He's basically saying, hey, I'm still the guy with the power because of look what I've been able to maneuver. I've got five Democrats on my side now. We can do whatever we want and keep supporting us, and you know, we'll keep being able to sort of flex the power. And one of those legislators who he had, quote, in his back pocket was Ernest Flagler Mitchell.
And Vince Felder, who claims to be the leader of our caucus.
But is Ernest Flagler Mitchell, I mean, like, why did Joe Carbone protect him for so long? Because he finally flipped late in the process, didn't he?
Yeah, he said there was a lot of pressure. And we were calling for his resignation, and we were calling for censure vote. And Dr. Carbone repeatedly said it's the will of the voters.
He wouldn't condemn Ernest Flagler Mitchell. By the way, Lakeia Sinclair, who came on this program and was remarkable, publicly identified herself and made these accusations, but everybody knew she was not the only one. So everybody knew it was a matter of time before there were more. The DA's office eventually reveals there are at least 11, if not 12 or 13. And Joe Carbone knew that.
I don't know what he knew, but I
there's
know,
no way he didn't know.
Yeah, I know that he continued to double down, and you know, I don't know what's in his mind.
And he blocked censure.
He did. He and the majority did.
So he blocked even censure, which is the most mild.
Right.
It's the most mild thing. It is the most toothless thing you can do, and he still said no.
That's correct.
Okay. Until when? When did that change with him?
Well, the calls for the resignation of Mr. Flagler Mitchell reached a crescendo. And I couldn't give you the exact date, but after about 5-6 days of this, saying let the voters decide, they wrote a press release, you know, Mr. Brew and Mr. Carbone, Dr. Carbone, saying you know that we believe that it's time for Mr. Flagler Mitchell to resign. So, but it was well after the situation had become a big pushback. And this has been a theme from the Cable Act forward of putting forward ideas and decisions, finding out that the body politic across the board, whether it's the Evan Dawson show, the Bob Lonsberry show, folks are saying, no, that's not a good idea. I don't think, you know, when you write legislation, and this is a sentence in it, I want to read it, please. Outside employment, this is in their bill, by employees in the management and professional classification shall be prohibited without exception. And then you try to make the argument that, well, we didn't really know what that meant. I mean, I negotiated contracts for teachers for 30 years. You never propose something unless you want it. And to say, oh, yeah, we proposed that, but oh, no, we didn't mean that. It just doesn't make sense to me. Is it thoughtless or is it just, I don't know. I mean, or do they just wait for pushback and think maybe it'll slide through? You know, there's some complaints that the county executive had made a brouhaha about it. Well, if we hadn't made a brouhaha about the Cable Act, it would have happened. If we hadn't made a brouhaha about this, it would have just been, it would have gone right through. So it's unfortunate. And, you know, this county executive has repeatedly invited the leadership of the Republican majority to visit, to meet with them, and they won't meet with them. So even on this, the back channel around maybe, you know, redoing this hasn't gone through the county executive, and he's a partner. I mean, it's a tripartite situation where you have an executive and you have two, you know.
It's not a healthy situation. I think earlier this week when a lot of this sort of bubbled up with this weird ethics reform implosion, I think the county executive, Steve Brew, the Republicans, they admitted, I mean, they're really not even talking. They're not meeting. They're not talking. It's not good.
Right.
It's not a good situation. And a listener points out that it sounded like Dr. Carbone's change of heart on Ernest Flagler Mitchell came pretty much the day the DA's report was released and became public. Do you give him any more credit for that? Do you give him credit for saying, hey, I wanted to wait until we had a formal public report from the DA and then I acted?
I don't give him much credit for his position throughout, but ultimately their decision to ask for Ernest Flagler Mitchell's resignation was tainted by their prior acts. But I embrace the final decision that they made.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be happy to talk to Dr. Carbone if he ever wants to come on this program. Turned down a number of requests, but of course you knew. Everybody in this town knew what was coming there. I hate to say it that way, but and I'm not being cynical, but we have to be honest about it.
Well, I don't think I know a lot of people because I'm from a family of lawyers and I pretended to be one for 10 years as a judge. That
anybody can be a judge, John.
Exactly, right. Just yeah. The old joke is my students say, did you go to law school? And I would say, well, when you're a town or village judge, you have to go to law school for 3 years or judge school for 3 weekends. And I went to judge school for 3 weekends. But, you know, there were no people that I heard that I connect with and network with in the justice system who questioned what was ultimately going to come out yeah. in the instance of Justice Rosenbaum. So that your point is that there's a fine line between a rumor-driven society
right. Yeah, absolutely.
And a society where you have broad dissemination of information
right.
that hasn't quite bubbled up in an official way, but honest brokers know it's real.
Yeah, and I think I actually do think that distinction matters because you're right. We don't want to just pursue and act only on rumors because it is easy to get velocity of rumors, especially in the social media
world. I teach
world.
The crucible. I mean, yeah. we don't want that.
Absolutely. Okay. That's fair. Michael is asking, can elected officials be recalled in New York State like what is happening in California right now?
No. And now they have to be beaten in elections, and it's why terms longer than 4 years are an issue. A lot of people, you know, say to me, oh, my God, you ran 2 years ago. You got to run in 2 years. I said, well, if you don't like that, don't get in the game. I'm out forcing me to go out, and I knocked on doors yesterday, the day before. I ended up meeting. I got to tell you something, Evan. Number one, people are listening to the radio more. I had multiple people reference radio shows, yours included, that they've heard different things on.
Everybody listens to this program.
Oh. But also, you know, I went through a phase where I thought, We live in a culture where a knock on the door is like a threat.
I mean, it's very different now.
When I was a kid, you know, somebody would knock on our door and we'd all run to the door. Somebody's here. And now you knock on the door and sometimes the people are looking at you.
You see, like, the curtain slowly
move. Yeah, and they don't come to the door. They have the Ring doorbell and you kind of wave to them. But I'm finding that post-COVID, people are home and they want to talk to somebody. And I've actually had a great time chatting with them. And so it is a good time. I think running for office is an opportunity to do some listening. And this is my point about the ethics reform. I don't think the people in the legislature are necessarily the ones with the answers. I think we need to listen to the faith community. We need to listen to the nonprofit community. We need to listen to the municipal officials. And we need to listen to the most important people of all, who are voters.
But you don't get to decide that right now. And you've made that point yourself this hour, that the Republicans have the majority and they have the control. And so I understand where you are on this, the idealistic way. I also understand the pragmatists, who are probably the Barack Obamas of the world, who would say, yeah, I wanted a public option on health care. I might have wanted single payer. But I damn well wanted something, and we took the best we could get. And you've got some colleagues earlier this hour, Legislator Barnhart is apparently in that group, saying we got to take the best we can get because we don't get to decide if we've got the majority this year, and somebody's going to pass something. We better get in that room and write it with them and get the best bill. You just don't believe that.
I believe in the Sisyphean struggle for what's right, and that's why I go to school every day for 45 years, okay? I know you go home at night going, yeah, that boulder is going to roll back down the hill when I get here tomorrow, and I got to push it back up. But I think there are certain issues where you're pragmatic, and I think there's certain issues like—
You're firm.
When you say, this is justice for the community when it comes to the elected officials. This is the end of self-dealing, at least the end of it when they get caught. It's going to go on when they don't get caught.
So no compromise there.
No compromise in the sense that I want a bill that's the product of the best thoughts of our entire community and not two or three people who are having coffee together the day of a Monroe County legislature meeting,
right,
cranking out something in a room over
all
at
right,
the office.
So this is the last thing on this, and then I've got one more totally unrelated. But what if the people in that room next week come out and they hand you, hey, John Baines, here's the legislation that we're going to put forward. And you go, you know what? I don't like the process that led to this, but this looks pretty good. You're still not going to go for it.
If it's better than pretty good, if it's good, I would vote for it and say that you've damaged your own work product by the process, but hear ye.
Okay.
Hooray for the work product. So I would be but would I go in the room and do it with them and say, you know, if they can come up with it, but I just don't think that that's the right way to do work.
Okay. When you were first elected to the legislature, you said on this program that you were going into office without cynicism, with a lot of hope, willing to sort of call balls and strikes on your own party, on anybody. You weren't in there just to make political friends. I want to sort of open the floor as we get in the last few minutes of this program and let you describe maybe where your head is on that. I mean, have you been moved at all towards cynicism? Have you changed at all in how you feel?
I have seen legislators whom I believe are really good people who are kind of operating in ruts or grooves in the landscape of the legislature that has been there. Those grooves have been there from legislatures before and before and before. It's sort of like, you know, institutions have their own agenda and individuals enter into them. And so one of the things that's troubled me is how little open and dynamic exchange there is in the majority caucus. The majority caucus, and this is something I've admired Republicans for as well, they're hyper-disciplined. But there's a difference between hyper-discipline and lockstep. You mean you guys can't talk about, you never disagree on anything? I mean, Rachel Barnhart and I don't agree on quite a few things, I can assure you.
But we talk.
We sure do, and we represent different communities in many ways, and not, you know, I wish we didn't. I think if we all were representing communities that had greater similarities to each other, then we would be in a better place. So thank you for your question, and I would say that I'm by nature, I'm optimistic, And I believe that you have to keep trying and trying and trying, but you don't sell out to do it. And you know, I'm not, you know, and people don't like me. I'm one of the people in the legislature.
Who doesn't like you?
Oh, there are some people who definitely don't like me. And they would love to see me defeated because I have called out some people. I was the person who made the motion to remove Vince Felder as minority leader. And I did so after spending a month trying to understand why he refused to let our party, per the law, pick its next election commissioner. I tried to understand him. I couldn't get it in my head. Like, we really are going to break up the family? Where I'm from, you never break up the family, right? I got 9 brothers and sisters. I mean, in the end, we're going to stay together. It was a heartbreaking incident. But I'm still, you know, one of the things that's inspired me is Mercedes Vasquez Simmons inspired me, and Ricky Frazier inspired me, and fresh blood is everything.
William Burgess
is, I hope you get a chance to.
Yeah, he's been on this program.
Oh, has he? Oh, my goodness. I heard them speak primary night, and I was so impressed by them and their moral compass. So, you know, the only way to keep the institution from programming everybody for the status quo is to bring in new players. And this is why I'm also big on, you know, let's see who the new players are. Even if I lose, there'll be a new player, right? So let's see who the new players are before we should have it ready for them to weigh in as a verdict on this issue.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Thanks for making time for the program today.
Yeah, and I wanted to comment to your listeners that I do follow you on Twitter. And I know you're very excited about the new name
for... Go Guardians!
The Cleveland Guardians Baseball Club.
I'm very excited about that. I think it's a great name. It's got some real history. If listeners don't know the name, the history of the name, do a little research. It's fun. There's some really cool Art Deco history in Cleveland that relates to that. It looks great. Yeah, I'm down. Go Guardians.
Right on. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here, John Baines. Our thanks to Rachel Barnhart, who joined us earlier this hour. And our hope is to continue having productive conversations. Look, you heard two people who don't agree on everything this hour, and they're here. So let's keep doing that. Rob Braden, Megan Mack, MRA Stein, Evan Dawson saying thanks for listening to Connections. We're back with you Monday on member-supported public radio.